It's great to have you with us today. My name's Peter Lynn. I'll be emceeing this session. If you're not in the Working Together Leadership Development and Accountability Seminar, you're in the wrong one. That's what we're doing today. And we have Archie Poulos and Juliet Antoon with us. I'm going to ask them a couple of quick questions, I'll pray, and then I'll hand it over. Firstly, Archie, you're one of the lecturers here, but can you tell us, apart from lecturing, what else you do here and also what you're doing before you came in a previous life to ministry?
I believe there's only one life that you have. That's the one God gives you. What else do I do? I direct the Centre for Ministry Development, which is to try and help many of you after we finish college to develop in some of the skills that we don't teach here at college. And before I came to college, a long time before I came to college, I used to do chemical engineering, so my eyes still light up when I see factories working well.
And Juliet, if I could ask you what you're doing now in terms of ministry and where, and what you were doing before you came into ministry.
I work down in Wollongong. I'm the women's worker there. And I also come up on Thursdays as a chaplain to the students here, as a visiting chaplain, a female chaplain. In my past life, I worked at the University of New South Wales, and I did a research job in medical research, and I used to chop up rats.
Sounds tasty. Let me pray. Heavenly Father, thank you for your goodness and kindness and generosity to us in sending the Lord Jesus, so that by his death and resurrection and through faith in him, we might have the forgiveness of sins and life eternal. And Father, thank you for the opportunity and privilege that it is that we have today to think more about how we can better serve your people and better serve your people as men and women working together. We pray now for Archie and Juliet that you would give them wisdom and clarity as they speak to us on this. And we pray that, Father, in our thinking together and in our learning together, that it might bear fruit for the work of the gospel and for your kingdom. And we pray this for Jesus' sake. Amen. You should have picked one of these up as you walked in the door. If you don't have one, just put your hand up quietly. And Roger's going to come around. Maybe someone else can help Roger hand them out. Thank you.
While they're coming around, we'll let you do it because it looks like a charismatic meeting if you keep those hands up, don't they? You don't need these just yet. I'll explain in a moment about what these handouts are about. One for Robin over here, and I think we're right. Well, it's our delight to be here, both Juliet and I. Just to give you a bit of background, we started on this journey thinking through leadership development and accountability about 6 months ago, and I can see by the numbers of you here today, it's actually a topic that's a fairly important topic to us all, and so it's pretty much our thinking on the practicalities of how we work in teams is what we've started to work on. Over these last 6 months, we've had an exciting time thinking about these issues. We've both read books on the topic. We've chatted with each other. We've asked other people for their experience. And so I think it's fair to say that both of us have been changed by the experience that we've gone through over these last few months. And in some senses, what I would like us to achieve today is to showcase what's happened with Juliet in her thinking over these last few months. Not that I haven't learned anything, it's just that she's on the ground and I'm not. It's an important topic that we are doing, though, because the secular world has spent certainly more than half a century, trying to improve teamwork and particularly the output of team members. Lots of you have worked in the secular workforce and have experienced that. The key performance indicators, all of those sorts of things, the development plans, the reporting regime. And strangely, over the same period of times, certainly in the earliest days of what the secular world has been doing and in our own city, churches tended to rely just on having good relationships to make their teams work, without much reflection on the processes that are involved in making teams function better. And what has happened? We've been playing catch-up in the last few years. 15 years ago, teams were a fairly uncommon sort of thing. Now they are much more common, and so we've started to import lots of the secular material into the way that our team functions, and as a result of that, sometimes we haven't gone through appropriate theological reflection. And so why do we need this topic today? We are in a day of transition. As I've said, we've followed generally secular patterns to measure outcomes, and they have their strengths and their dangers to them. We need to have accountability in our churches. The staff, particularly the paid staff, need to be accountable, but sometimes we haven't thought through carefully what the consequences of those things are. And more widely than that, sometimes we pick up the good tools that the secular world has given us without thinking about what else is going on, what are some of the issues that we need to think about. And if we don't do this sort of thinking, it will hurt our relationships in our team, the people involved will be damaged, and the whole congregation, the whole church can be hurt, and probably more importantly, our Lord is not honoured when our ministry teams don't work well together. And as we think about ministering in teams, it is different, isn't it? When you're employed, there are certain sorts of levers that can be pulled. I'm going to sack you. When you're employed, if you don't perform well, you don't go up the ladder, all those sorts of things. And we don't have that, do we? We actually do it because we want to see our Lord praised. And so there are different sorts of levers that we need to think about. And as we think about it too, members of the teams are different. We're not all the same. So since we're talking about 1 Corinthians 11 this morning, 1 Corinthians 14, 1 Corinthians 12 in the middle there, you see that image, don't you, that the Apostle Paul gives about the church, where the church is a body. And in that image, the metaphor is a metaphor both of unity and of diversity, isn't it? So we are the one team, we are the one body, at the same time as the eye isn't the same as the hand, isn't the same as the foot, isn't the same as the ear. And so that sort of diversity is something we need to take into account. So they're the sorts of things that we thought we would do with you this afternoon. So we need to engage with the teamwork material, because too often I think our staff haven't been held accountable. But without excusing poor performance, we actually need to see that our setting is different to what the secular world has. I've said already that relationships matter to us. Ministry, all ministry is relational, and so we need to think about that. And we are not driven by career advancement or financial reward. So where do we go? We're aware here today that we have team members and supervisors of team members. I look out and I can see that we have both males and females here. And so we've got four different groups of people, team members, team leaders, male and female, that fit in both of them. And so we're hopeful that what we say is actually will be helpful for every one of you. So here's those of you that know me know that I always think in diagrams. Here's my little diagram. That is, when we think about teams and accountability and how we should function, you actually need to think about you. You can't just import ways of making teams work because you carry baggage with you. If you're the team member, you carry baggage. If you're the team leader, you carry baggage. And the way we relate is part of our history. So you need to understand yourself. You also need to understand the team that you're in. That is, it might just be you and another person, but often teams are bigger than that. And the team is not just you and the other person, but there's the people you lead in church too. They're part of your team. So there's the congregation and the processes that are in place. We will be talking about how do you think about the processes to make the most of you, your teamwork, and of our congregation. And then we will talk later on about measured outcomes, how are you held accountable. And often that's where the diagram stops. But I want to say what is crucial is that we're about further development. That is, every one of us becoming better in our service of the Lord. And so our plan today with you is to work through the real-life situation of Juliet in her team. So Juliet, and we're thankful too for Erector Sandy, who've kindly allowed us to look at what they do, and that's because we don't want to reside in the world of abstract. We actually want to deal with live ammunition. Secondly, we want to look at a specific situation that Juliet's been involved in as we think together about how she developed and improved and grew in her goal setting. And finally, that led us in our thinking to a whole lot of different issues on the topic. So we developed a survey that we circulated around, and we'll give you some of the feedback about that, about how accountability functions, how team functions and all of that. Now, before I hand over to Juliet, let me say to you, I suspect that many of you will be frustrated with where we conclude, because I am not going to give you stipulations, but I hope and we hope that you'll be expanded in the ways you think about ministry in teams, and we will be making suggestions about what good might look like, but we're leaving it to you to work out what it is like in your own team. Okay, so I'm happy if after this you say, oh yeah, I just don't know where to go now, so we'll email us and we'll work out together what we should do. Now, I'm going to hand over to Juliet, because Juliet is going to talk about her monthly report. So in her team setting, she does a monthly report to Sandy, her rector, and we're not doing it to show how bad this is, nor are we doing it to show how good this is. It's just that they do this at St Michael's in Wollongong, and so it's a good place for us to start. So, Juliet, over to you.
Yeah, so we're not saying whether this form is an 8 out of 10 or a 6 out of 10 or a 4 out of 10, so really want to make that clear. I do want to share with you this monthly report. This is what my boss asks me to prepare for him before we meet. Now, we were not saying today, there's not many people in ministry that I know of that have to fill out this kind of report with this sort of intensity. And I have to give credit to my supervisor, my boss, because he actually wants to be a good supervisor by asking me to fill this kind of form out for him. So questions 1 to 3 of the monthly report about my personal Bible reading and my prayer. Now, this is the right place to start as Christian ministers, and we really do have to remember that we will always fail if we don't get this right, if our godliness fails. So it's a personal and as well as a team responsibility, our godliness, and so I think I'm thankful for this question. I should press the myself. Is it just that?
Yeah, that one.
Okay. Question 4 is trying to keep me accountable to my goals. In even months, I'm asked to comment on my progress on certain agreed goals. For example, in my case, I was recently expected to come up with some goals that for a new area that I'm now working on, and I chose my goals in good faith, but over time I've become convinced that a better first step would have been actually to work out where they fitted priority-wise and timing-wise within the overall vision of the church and where it wants to go. So it's a good question to ask me, as I want to be and I need to be held accountable, but there are questions behind this one which are more important.
Why do you need to be held accountable?
Because I'm being paid for ministry, my ministry, and my boss is also ultimately responsible for the parish, where the finances are spent in my parish and employing me. But I recognise that my ultimate accountability is to God, so it's not actually...
So I ask that question because it's important. If you are in paid ministry, there are expectations that are placed upon you that are valid ones to have that aren't the same for other people. Now, Juliet, in a moment we're going to work through this, but you are going to take us through your WOW ministry, Women on Wednesdays. That's right. So why don't you start that and we'll chat about it as you go through.
Which bit?
We're up to slide 5.
Oh, good. Okay. So we're up to question 5 of my monthly report. And this one asks about who I've met with for pastoral ministry. And I'm really thankful for this question too, because it reminds me that relationships and people are at the heart of my ministry. And sometimes it's easy to forget that when you have responsibilities and goals. The next question is question 6, and that asks, under God, what else did you accomplish in the last month? And to answer this question, I actually list out basically what I've done on my to-do list. And it's My boss gets a big picture of where I've been using my time, and then I get to feel good about myself. And it's especially helpful if I have been feeling discouraged to actually see my achievements listed in black and white. However, listing out my achievements in black and white doesn't really help me see if I've been successful in my ministry. And it doesn't tell me what good looks like or how I should be measuring my ministry. It doesn't remind me that my priority is to be faithful or that God is actually ultimately responsible for the work that I'm doing and bringing growth from what I'm doing. So let me illustrate this for you. In the past, I've run women's breakfasts, and the women from my church get together from across the congregations and we open God's word and encourage one another in Christ. Now, I usually just put down held women's breakfast under this question as one of my achievements. But what would be more useful for me as a result of writing that down would be for us to work out how to measure how useful the women's breakfasts have been, whether they were a success. So questions like, what happened at the breakfast? Did you get people there? Who came? Was it edifying? And was God's word spoken? Was it a quality teaching time? Did it do what you hoped it would achieve? And how have people changed after this breakfast?
So can I just clarify? So the way it is now, it's just what did you do? You're actually asking the deeper questions, more than just the task. You're asking the question about how are we seeing disciples being made into disciples? Is that the
Yes, that's right. Yeah. I think also some other things that he could ask me would be, how does it actually achieve what I want it to achieve, and are there better ways of achieving the same goals? So I think you're right, it's bigger than just one task. And the thing that those kind of discussions that I've just mentioned would help my boss and I to actually be on the same page as far as my ministry is concerned. And it also would help me feel less like I'm being checked out for being unproductive. So that moves me on to the next question. I did have another thought, though, about this question. I wonder whether it's sometimes it's a personality differences that sort of question is helpful for some people. But for those of us who beat ourselves up a little bit about what we can't get done or we don't get done, it sometimes can be a hard question to answer. So question 7 is the last question from my monthly report that I'll share with you, actually in detail. It asks me what problems or blockages that I've encountered in my ministry in the last month. And I'm asked to write down internal and external blockages. So internal blockages might be something that, like my indecisiveness, or an external blockage might be that I'm waiting for someone else to get back to me about something, or people have said no to me about being a leader or something like that. Part of the supervisor's job is actually to coach their staff through the blockages. And so recently I faced the situation where I had some competing interests in terms of setting up our church calendar for the year. So I have found it hard to actually find a space for a women's breakfast at the start of the year, because other team members, who will remain nameless, were grabbing all the weekends that I wanted. So sometimes there are competing systemic interests, and a supervisor needs to be aware of those, and they need to be able to help the team work better. And so asking me this sort of question is helpful. Now, for the sake of completeness, I'll just show you the last questions from my report, but I won't discuss them. So, God willing, what do you plan to accomplish in the next month? What else do you want to talk to me about? How hard do you feel you've been working? How's sharpening the saw mentally, physically, emotionally, and personally? And what would you like me to pray about?
Thank you. That's a very helpful start, isn't it? Well done. Although you can see there's a whole lot of other questions that are raised by that, and that is things like this report doesn't go into how do you go about setting your goals, how are we going to agree on the goals, what goals are we going to be measured against, it's those sorts of things. Are the goals appropriate? And they're the sorts of things that the secular world is really big on. Some of you have done some supervision courses with me here last year. And in terms of supervision, that is Juliet with her minister, we talk about the three-legged stool of supervision, which is actually just a really helpful thing. So those of you that are supervisors, and also all of us, to be honest, because we all lead other people, don't we? The three-legged stool is formative, normative, and restorative. I'll explain each of them. So formative, as you're going through the sorts of ministries that you've been involved in the last month, how can we work together, ask the questions so that you can become better at what you're doing? That's got to be helpful, hasn't it? That's the formative side. The normative side is the ethics of it. How come you have been pocketing all the money and just putting it in the plate on Sunday? You know, that, there's an ethical problem with that, isn't there? So just making sure that you're operating ethically. And finally, the restorative one is most of us in ministry at times feel like fakes, feel like imposters. And when that's exposed or when we feel that sometimes you need to have the band-aids put on, and that's part of what the whole reporting thing should be about as well. Now, we don't have time to explore that at the moment. We're going to talk about it in a little while's time. But where we're going to go now is Juliet is going to take us through one of those areas where she actually has worked at clarifying her goals and articulating them more clearly. Now, Juliet, you've taken responsibility, as I said before, for the Women's Bible Study called Women on Wednesday. And it's a normal thing, to be honest, for a female worker in a church to be responsible for that, so much so that the other staff and congregation members just assume that you'll take responsibility for doing that ministry and never ask you the hard questions. So I'm interested to think about your thinking in the last few months about WOW. So I hand over again to you.
Well, it's interesting how you phrased that. I do think people assume that we will know, just because we are women, that we will know how to take on a new role in the Women's Bible Study Group. And I think that's true of other areas, for men and women actually taking on new roles. I came actually from a student ministry background, and so Women's Bible Study, with its creche rosters and its wider age range and its political nuances, were actually a foreign thing for me. And so basically I've developed some WOW goals for this year, which I want to show you. But the reason that I actually put these goals together is mainly because we, as a staff team, articulated a clearer vision for the church. We had a really long one before, and so I was really excited when I saw this one. And I thought I'd try to work out how my vision and goals for WOW could be aligned with that. I wanted also to get myself helping the whole vision of the church to work better. So I was happy about the shortened version for a couple of reasons. I thought it would work better. I also wanted to step back. I'll show you our church vision so you can be looking at it while I'm talking. I also wanted to step back from leading a small group at Women on Wednesday, because I wanted to concentrate on helping the leaders to grow in their roles and increase my own way of working on the ministry rather than in the ministry. So partly to get the leaders together on the same page, I produced this document that I'm going to share with you, and I've been sharing this document with the WOW leaders. So I started with the overall vision of St. Michael's vision statement, and I applied it to WOW. So you can see how I've applied it there. Listed some specific purposes of WOW. Sorry, that's the next one. And things like bringing people, bringing women together from across the parish to study God's word and pray, provide opportunities for women to grow as disciples of Jesus, encourage mentoring relationships that help women honour Jesus through their many roles and life stages, encourage relationships that help women connect into the church, and provide a creche to facilitate the participation of, we've got very high standards, haven't we, for our women. There are more than these, I have to say, as the purposes of WOW, but that's to give you a bit of a taste. My document then went on to suggest some goals for the WOW leaders in the next year, and we've discussed and modified these. Basically, they're still in the process of being explored with them, with the leaders, and in the basically all the the women need to be still. I still need to negotiate some of these things. The final part of my WOW document articulated what my own goals are in relation to the leaders, so that they can know what to expect from me in terms of training and support. And my latest draft has such things as meeting once a term with individual leaders, sitting in when they're leading 3 times a year, and asking each member of their groups how they're finding the group and discussing the feedback with the leader. So let me emphasise that I am yet negotiating some of these things according to their needs and their preferences. But they're a starting point, and then helping them to see where I'm coming from in terms of training.
Hey, can I? That's very, very helpful. I hope you found that helpful. One of the things for me that if I was your supervisor, I'd be wanting to say, it's been a long time since I've been a woman, so I don't know if this is true or not, but one of the things I'm interested in is I observe that women follow you and work with you when you spend time with them. And if you're not leading a group, if you're not week by week being there, doing those informal things like pouring the tea and that sort of thing, I'd want to ask you the question as your supervisor, do you think this will help women to work alongside you as you try to achieve the goals? It's those sorts of things that we need to think through, because this is fantastic. Now the hard thing is, how do we get this to be part of your accountability? How do we get this to be part of your development? How do we make sure that you're able to achieve what you're trying to do? That's where I think we need to keep moving to. So if I can move on. I've got some notes here that Juliet said I need to say to you. That's not there. So one of the things is, having done this work, which is great work, I want to ask the question, have you raised these goals with your supervisor and gotten input from him? That's actually a fairly important thing, isn't it? Because Juliet has made some substantial changes. What does he think about it? Does he know what Juliet's doing? And have you agreed on what accountability will look like for this? Because the way it was before, it seems like, did Juliet run WOW? Now there's different sets of goals, and so how are you going to be held accountable to those goals? And do the other staff know about these changes? Are they on board with them? How are they going to help you to enact them? It's those sorts of things to think about. And so I'm a fan of having goals that are smart and using the GROW model. I'll explain that in a moment. Some of you know it and some of you don't, so I'll take a moment to explain it. I want us to set realistic goals, but unless we implement them in a relational way in our teams, we'll fail. So I'm a fan of SMART goals. Some of you know about them. SMART are specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and time-related. I'll say them again because some of you are taking notes. Specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and time-related. You see, that's actually a very helpful tool to actually go through that with Juliet, and you say, that's not achievable, Juliet. You're a fool to try and do it. Then you can have the negotiation on it. Or time-related, well, you'll see the fruit of that in 30 years' time, but what about the immediate horizon? It's those sorts of things. So SMART goals are really, really helpful. But I've seen them just applied as people saying, here are your goals, and there's no negotiation, no ownership, and so you've got to watch out for that. The other model that I like is the GROW model. Everything's an acronym in the secular world, the corporate world. GROW models are, what is the goal? That's what you've been working on because you've been aligning your vision for WOW with the vision of the church. What is your goal? What is the reality of what's going on? So you want to have all the women ministering to women, but you've only got 3 people in the group. That might be a reality problem. So just helping you to be realistic about things. The O in GROW is obstacles or options. Now, I know that Sandy asked you that question. What gets in the way, or what? How else might we do it, which is what you've been working on? And the W is what is the way forward. Now, they're actually not bad ways. As you're working in your team to try and remember how I said before, develop achievable things that you can be held accountable for so that you can further development and the ministry under God can grow. They're not bad. So GROW and SMART models aren't bad. Now, We're going to change gear. Are you with us now?
Hello.
Hello, anyone out there?
Good.
This is the fun part now. As we were talking about this, a few weeks ago, Juliet and I developed a survey which we circulated to people in teams to try and work out how we are going in teams in being held accountable and in being developed. I think this is actually helpful for us to go through because Juliet and I will stand up here and tell you why we think the questions are important, and that's what you've got there in that handout there. It's been very exciting for us because so far we've had 28 people respond. That's a pretty good survey. So it gives us a feel of what's going on in our teams. Two-thirds of those respondents were women and the other third were the other gender. So you can see the survey there. I'll let Juliet start to take us through there. And what will happen here is this is not as scripted as the other stuff, so we'll just be throwing stuff in at each other. But so you want to take us through the first few, Juliet?
Yes. Okay, the first one is asking what your gender is. And that was mainly because we want to recognise that not just women are the ones that work as assistants, but also men do. What's your team leader's gender? Most of the team leaders were male. In fact, all of them were that we asked. And how long have you been on the current team? Well, nearly half of the respondents had been for more than 6 years on their teams, and most had been on team for more than 3 years.
So that's worth noticing, isn't it? That's a much higher number than I thought. So teams have become a part of our lives.
And more long-term.
Yeah, more long-term, and we haven't put much effort into making sure they work well.
Yep. And the answer to how big your team is, well, there were a range of responses, but one was 10 plus, so that was quite noticeable. How many ministry staff teams have you been in? Well, again, a variety of experiences were seen there.
Okay. And then we asked the question six, do you have your own job description within the team? 96% of people said yes, and only 4% said no. So only one person didn't have a job description. That's a really good number because if you don't have a job description, you'll achieve nothing. You'll feel guilty, won't you? So well done. But I thought it'd be worthwhile getting your comments on what's the downside in particular of not having a job description and what is the upside of having a job description. So you've got a couple of minutes here. This is to wake you up, really. What's the downside of not having a job description? Okay. So,
I just have a question.
Kath.
Are you thinking about a job description one that has been given to you or one that you actually make up for yourself?
That's what we're going to work on in a little while. That's very interesting, isn't it? That some jobs have been given, some descriptions have been given to us and some are created by you and some of them are done collaboratively. Mm-hmm. That is a really important question. So you've actually just solved all that we're going to talk about for the next half hour.
Still our thunder. That's okay.
But it doesn't, in this sense, it doesn't matter much, does it? Their expectations that are articulated really does matter because it helps you to work out whether you're actually achieving what you've been asked to achieve, whether it is initiated with you by you or by another person.
I think it depends on the personality of the person too, in the sense that some people, you don't need to give a job description, you just need to let them go and they'll go do it. Other people, you need to sort of tell them every day what they're going to do.
Yeah. Thanks, Sean. Juliet. The literature, which comes out of Canada, I don't know how you can know this, says that 85% of expectations are unarticulated. I don't know how anyone can know it's 85% since it's not articulated, but be that as it may, some people can get on with it, but it's really hard. It's really important that all the parties know about it. And so that you get on with it, you know what you're doing is fine, but your team leader might have a different set of agendas, different set of expectations. The other team members might not know. And the congregation's scratching their head and saying, what's going on here? We've got a friend who works in ethnic ministry and he said that he spent the first year doing Muslim ministry, which is really hard. And he spent the first year just being in coffee shops talking with anybody who would about Jesus. And he felt guilty because he thought, this is what people do in their spare time. My real job is to run a church. No, it's not. He was actually the evangelist to Muslims. And so being able to articulate it is actually really very important. It keeps you sane as much as anything. Dan?
I was going to say, following on from that, I think it's in terms of having a job description and the importance of it,
is it's not just important for you, but it's important for the team that you work with to know what you do and for you to know what they do so that you can all do well together.
Yep, thank you. Mm-hmm. Everyone. Well,
it also depends how much detail there is in the job description. You might actually have 10 things to do. You've got no room to develop yourself. You're so tied to ABCD and that initiative. You have to grow the industry.
And it's not just, is there 10 things, rather, is there one thing? Is there flexibility? How do we make the modifications based on the personalities that we have? Thank you. Shall we move on then?
Oh, can I just say one thing? Just illustrate. I can illustrate that actually it was about a year and a half after one of my colleagues started on the team with me that it came out that he actually thought the only thing I do is look after WOW. Women on Wednesday. So I was shocked that he thought that that was my job.
It's interesting, isn't it? That does
it
mean...
It wasn't articulated.
So it does mean that the job description isn't just between you and your supervisor. The team and probably the congregation needs to know what's going on as well. That's a helpful thing, isn't it? Now, question 7.
Yep.
Have you had input into modifying your job description? 9 out of 10 people said yes. That's a good thing, but... we realise the question wasn't a great question because we're not sure exactly what they were responding to. What we were interested in getting at is the collegiality that goes on. So if you've got a job description you realise it's not quite right, how do you work together at modifying it? What we discovered as we looked at some of the written responses were that some people were saying, I had input as to whether I accepted it or not. Well, that's not the sort of thing we're looking at. So,
it's also sometimes the team actually gets, if they don't know your job description, they'll get in the way of you doing your job description.
Yeah.
So that's another aspect of it.
And then question 8, my job description is based mainly on who I am, my role, or unsure. More than 2/3 of the people said the job description is based on the jobs that you've got to do, your role. That's fair enough because if you're in paid ministry, you are paid to do a job. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you don't explore who you are in the context of the team that you are in, you may well underperform because being wired certain ways actually helps you to excel in some areas and find it really hard in other ones, doesn't it? And so it's right to have job descriptions, but you actually need to understand yourself and the team that you're in. One of the things, when it comes to having job descriptions, that's an important thing, but how do you measure the outcome then? Because some things are easy. That is, my job description is to run WOW. And I ran WOW, so I get 10 out of 10 for that. But if my job description is to do women's ministry in such a way that the women love the Lord and will serve each other and proclaim his name with every breath that they've got, how do you measure that? Now, that's actually a much more Christian outcome, isn't it, the second one, but how do you measure it? And so I want to say you've got to think that through very carefully. Some outcomes you can just tick off. Other things you have influence upon people, and so you've got to try and work out, is there any validity in measuring the influence? And so one of those is, women invited me to come and join them. This is one of the things I'd suggest to you if I was your team leader. How many women invited Juliet to come and sit in the group and to watch what's happening? That's one of the measures that I think you could use. Okay, so when it comes to job descriptions, it is not just what have you achieved. We are striving under God to be used by him to help people develop. And the level of influence, the more it's about influence and not outcome, the harder it is to quantify. That makes sense? But again, you need to have some quantifiable outcomes, and so that's a discussion between you and your team leader.
Should we get rid of these, or do you
want to... I'll just get rid of them. Okay, we're up to question 9 then. How is your performance measured? And I'll hand over to Juliet again.
Yep. So half were unsure how they were performing, and 1/3 of people never have their performance measured in our 28 sample group. So that effectively means that 2/3 of the people are in anxiety-creating situations. This is actually an issue, and we should be doing it better because developing a non-anxiety environment is important for team members.
I think that's actually really important because The next question, question 10, how closely is your perception of your ministry tied to the achievement of your goals? What we discovered was that nearly 80% of people saw a definite link between the achievement of their goals and how their ministry is perceived. Now, you can see how that can create anxiety if it's not right. So you really got to work hard at what is it that you are doing in your setting, given who you are, be very clear about it, and not, we naturally assess ourselves, we're used, most of us are university graduates, and so we're used to being marked pass or fail. And as a result of that, the anxiety it creates can actually stifle you. So it's really important to get that right. By the way, on this there, as I said to you before, there is nothing wrong with having goals, but what's important is to have agreed goals, and that's what we've got to try and work at, because if you've got agreed goals and you can honestly and openly discuss them, you can develop them. But in order to honestly and openly discuss them, here's a word that we're going to keep using from here on in, requires trust. The most important thing in a team is that you trust the other members and that they trust you, irrespective of the outcome. I had the privilege in working in a team for many years where we knew that the boss would die for us, and so we were willing to die for him. That's a fairly rare thing, and we've got to keep working at that, but because we're so busy in team, we take team members on, we actually forget how important that is. Trust is absolutely crucial. Okay, question 11, Julia.
Yeah. How regularly are you given feedback by your direct supervisor about your ministry performance? By feedback, we mean positive and negative comments, and they're intended to actually develop you and improve you. So this question showed twice as many people got regular feedback than those who didn't. So feedback isn't valuable if you don't, if it's not given so that you'll develop. It's not useful. And you need to get that regularly enough for you to develop.
Yeah, it's the type of feedback you get that matters, doesn't it? Some of you know that I ask five questions of people, so it's two-way traffic. The first question is, you know, when you're talking about wow, and you say, how's it gone the last month? I'll actually ask these questions. What do you think went well? What do you think, second question, the second question is, what do you think you can improve in? Because rather than me telling you how you went and me telling you how you can improve, what we are trying to do is help all of us develop, aren't we? So I want to help you to improve in your ability to assess and your ability to work out how to do better. But it's not just one-way traffic either. The second part of it's the same question in reverse. That is, this is what I think you did well, and this is the area that I think you can improve in. Then you can have a conversation, can't you? Because it's two-way traffic. And then the final question that I asked is, well, what are the next steps that we can work on together to do better? So I think it's really important as you are having meetings and supervision and accountability and all that sort of stuff, it's always important to work out how can we develop each other, how can we develop our team so that under God the ministry might go forward.
Mm. Now, the previous question assumes that we're getting feedback from our supervisor, but we also need to get feedback from those that we're ministering to. If your supervisor gives you negative feedback, I think it's actually helpful to have concrete feedback from other people to learn from, and also to encourage you. There were a significant number of people who got anecdotal feedback, but not many people looked for deliberate feedback from a wide audience. It's a real problem if you only ever hear from the people that are saying no to you, saying bad things, or if you're only ever hearing from people who say the good things about you. So that's why it's really important to ask widely. And also you might dismiss the feedback if it's only from one person, or you might overrate it. So it's really, really important. We can't emphasise this one more and more.
Can I underline that? I know you've just underlined it, but that really is very important. The whole thing we're talking about now, coaching and feedback and that sort of stuff, and it's between you and your supervisor if you're the one being supervised, but you do need to find out legitimate ways of getting good feedback from those that you're ministering to. And it, often it's tied up with what you're like. So if you're the sort of personality that likes beating yourself up, you'll hear the negative, the one negative, and you won't hear the 10 positives. Mm. Or if you're the different sort of person, you only hear the positive, and you know, when everybody else is calling for your blood. Do we have a 5 minute? Oh, no. You'll hear the one positive, and you think everybody thinks like that. Yeah. And so just to help you to develop and to actually understand the situation as it is, it's good to find ways of getting that right. So, Juliet, is there any ways that you can think about how you might do that, how you get good, appropriate feedback rather than just the anecdotes that are shaped by what you want to hear?
I was going to ask everyone else.
Oh, okay. Sure.
I thought we'd get some wider wisdom, if there's any wider wisdom on this topic. Have you got any suggestions about how you can solicit good and wide feedback from people that you're ministering to?
I want you to think about this. Even if you can't answer it now, this is important.
Yeah.
Okay. So I shouldn't point
the finger. I'll tell you what happens with us. We've had a 360 degree feedback, which is where you look at, you've got a series of questions about your ministry, and you basically the boss fills it in, you fill it in, and your peers fill it in, and people that are under you fill it in. So it's 360 degrees. And so it's looking very broadly at your ministry in a way that's helpful. The other thing is I thought of was things like a homemade survey. But I think really it's important, if you are asking for feedback, to make sure that people think that they're doing you a favour, because you want their honest feedback, and you really don't want them to feel like they're going to be afraid of hurting your feelings. And it just really emphasises that it is for your development, and that you would really, really, really appreciate it from them.
Well, I think this is really hard. That's why I'm getting a bit agitated by it. People either want to say nice things to you or want to tear you down. Mm-hmm. And in our Christian setting, both occur. And so it's really hard to ask, how am I going as the leader of WOW? You chat around things. And the important thing is for you to be listening to all the sorts of comments, and to have others who are doing it too, and then chatting with them about it, people who are on your side who are trying to help you get that information.
And really ask the deliberate questions as well.
Great.
What sort of things does your supervisor mostly give you feedback on? Well, it can be really frustrating when you're not given feedback on things that matter to you. It's interesting that most people said that they were given feedback on important matters that come up. And only 10% said they got feedback on matters that they thought were important. Now, we have to admit that this question actually could have been a bit sharper, but there is good evidence that in a lot of the cases, the direction of matters for feedback came from the supervisor to the team member. The one being held accountable seems to have less input. And Archie has something to say on that.
If it's one-way traffic from your supervisor to you, that's the way a secular world tends to function. But if we're about helping all of us do better, ownership matters, doesn't it? And so, therefore, you as the one being supervised actually need to be able to say, these are things I actually need help in, these are the areas I need to be held accountable for, these are the things I need to be supervised in. Again, those of you who have done the supervision course with us, in supervision in the whole secular world, it's client-driven. And yet we tend not to operate that way. If we do supervision, it tends to be, we haven't got much time, let's get through this, these are the things I want to talk to you about. It's really helpful if you, as the one being supervised, need to be developed, then you've got to own the value of this event. Oh, I'm next. Who works out your ministry goals? Question 14. About 50% of people said that their goals were worked out cooperatively. That's Kath's comment from earlier. We don't know exactly what that means. How cooperative was it? But I want to say half is not good enough. If people don't have input, they won't own their goals. And if they don't own their goals, and you say as the supervisor you're not meeting your goals, they'll just be embittered and they'll detach and it will become very, very messy. So I want to say this is really important, that we make sure that they are worked out cooperatively.
And also, I think we were talking about whether or not how goals need to fit into the whole vision of the church.
Oh, that's the next question. Question 15, what is most true of your goals? Half of the ministry goals are aligned to what the goals of the church are. Again, I want to say that half is not high enough. It doesn't help if your goals aren't aligned with what the church has accepted and their staff has accepted. What's going to happen is the teamwork won't work well. The people on the ministry staff, you won't be working in the same direction, and the congregation won't understand what you're doing anyway. And one of the dangers that we keep seeing, sadly, in churches is that non-alignment means that some people follow this member of staff, other people follow that member of staff, and it causes division. Now, some follow Paul, some follow Apollos, some follow Cephas. You get the idea from 1 Corinthians, don't you? Whereas if we actually have decided and agreed that we as a team are going to work for this and our church is going to work for this, then it actually helps prevent that happening.
And that's what I was trying to do with my monthly report. When I went through that, how some of my goals actually need to be re-evaluated in terms of the whole church and its relation in timing and relevance with the whole church. It's also worth saying that teams work better if everybody's goals are aligned to the vision of the church, because it means you actually have to work together with each other.
That's just good secular sense, but it makes sense in our churches as well.
Yeah. What happens when goals are not met? Well, it was encouraging that over half of the responders assessed their goals with the wisdom of hindsight. We thought that was a good thing. There were 10% who felt useless. And there was more than a fifth that said they weren't held responsible, they weren't held accountable for not keeping goals. And we feel that this is actually almost, or it is, negligence. And it means that they're not being cared for and they're not being developed as leaders.
That's how to take the wind out of your sails, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
To have goals that no one ever pays any attention to. You're just a waste of space, to be honest, is what some people think. Okay.
Yeah, so Lincioni would actually say that lack of attention to the results is a dysfunction in the team situation, and we all believe Lincioni.
I mentioned to you before about the three-legged stool, formative, normative and restorative. Let me say to those of you that are team leaders, most of whom, interestingly, in this survey were men, in supervision, you, the supervisor, need to take responsibility to make sure the time of supervision is really valuable for the person you're supervising.
So part of the supervisor's job is actually to help you work out whether your goals had been realistic in the first place, or whether there was a problem in your ability, or whether there was a problem in your approach, or whether you just can't do it. There was some other blockage. One of the supervisor's jobs is actually to help you by upskilling you where necessary. Now, I've got a question for Archie on this topic. I want to know, how can someone be formed by someone who's never done that job? So I'm just thinking of myself as a women's minister being supervised by a male. I'm sure there's others.
Yeah, if we had time, I'd throw it out to you. That's what I'd do. But we don't have time. I think the important thing as a supervisor is to just ask the questions. What sort of things come into your head? So that example I gave you before, if you are pulling out from the leading of the WOW studies and that sort of stuff, what makes you think the women will want to work beside you? When you ask them, will they do something? If you are distant from them, the answer you're likely to get is no. So that's the sort of thing I'd want to investigate further. If you do pull out of WOW, how is it that you're going to find, recruit, and raise up the next generation of WOW leaders? It's all those sorts of questions. So the supervisor doesn't need to have the answers. The supervisor needs to ask the questions. And I'd want to ask the question, are you pulling out of leading a group in WOW because you don't like being with other women? Now, that's a serious question to ask, because if the answer to that is, yeah, you're right, then we need to find a different position for you, don't we? And that has actually happened once before in my own experience. So you don't have to have the answers, you just got to be able to ask the questions, because what it's about is helping you to develop, and sometimes you're so caught up in doing the task, you actually don't think of the questions to ask.
Thank you. Are we a failure in ministry when we don't reach our stated goals? Well, do we actually have to have stated goals anyway to do our ministry and for it to be valued? Wouldn't it be really interesting to go through the pastoral epistles and work out some of Paul's goals for ministry? Now, sometimes I wonder if we focus too much on our planned goals so that we don't value God's working through us in more spontaneous ways. That's just a bit of naughtiness coming out there. But basically, our goals should always be subsidiary to God's big goals as ministers for the of his flock. In one sense, we have less freedom and more limitations on us once we enter vocational ministry. And as soon as we get paid, the expectation is that we're somehow going to be doing things differently to what we used to be doing when we weren't being paid for it as volunteers. And in my experience, this includes things like having these goals, these stated goals. I think we need to actually be careful in case our goal setting has actually been related to justifying our position on staff instead of actually the best thing for the church. Next thing on number 17 is, what is the main style of supervision that you receive from your supervisor? Well, most meetings people had were face-to-face, and that is really, really good. And what's the purpose of your meetings into number 18 with your supervisor? Well, there were diverse and appropriate purposes that were listed there, and that's, again, a good thing.
In question 19, how does your supervisor support you in achieving your goals? Now, you know that we think this is really important, and it seems to be that there has been, out of the 28 respondents, really good support from supervisors, both in the light touch informal methods and through formal means. However, 25% of the people, that's 7 out of 28, said there was no support. I've got to say, that's too big a number. And the trouble is, the longer you're in a role, the greater the expectation is that you'll do better in the role. But if we're not helping you to do better, what happens is the longer you're in a role and the more it stays the same, the more you lose heart and the more the people you're ministering to lose heart.
Yeah.
And so 25% of people aren't getting help to get better.
Yeah. Number 20, do all these purposes occur in the same meeting? Well, 50% said yes, that all those purposes do occur in the same meeting. And the danger with having all those purposes occurring in the same meeting was that you could be disorganised and unfocused in your... And it's also hard to prepare for when you're trying to do all those things at the same time.
I think there are two different types of meetings. One is the accountability meeting, and the other one is just a team that we might grow in our trust and love of each other. And it's good to separate the two out. In the corporate world, the one that I've seen that works best is there's actually just a monthly chat where you just talk about how the ministry's going. You pick something in the ministry to discuss, led by the person who's being supervised, and that often just helps and it creates greater trust. And then quarterly, you say, well, let's now measure against these things that we're accountable for. By the way, when it comes to accountability, I want to say both the supervisor and the one being supervised need to agree to how we're going to be held accountable, and then each quarter you work against that, and then you work out how we might do better than it.
And so the importance of informal relating is recognised in the secular world, but it's actually what sometimes is missing between men and women who are working in ministry. And I find that spending a genderless time with people on my team actually builds trust. It's okay to want to be pure when we're relating to team members who are of the opposite sex, but that's no excuse not to relate as brothers and sisters.
I'm going to do something here which none of the books tell you to do. And that is to say, build inefficiency into your relating times. That is inefficiency where you're just chatting, chewing the fat, drinking a cup of coffee together. Some of you do that. That's all you do. That's not good either. But that sort of inefficiency says you matter more than the task matters. And that's part of what Danny was saying to us this morning, wasn't it? The relationship is more important than the identity that comes from the task. And so one of the ways that is signalled is actually by having built-in inefficiency.
Number 21, how often do you meet with the supervisor one-to-one, and how often would you prefer to meet with your supervisor? Well, most people said weekly or fortnightly, and most people were happy with how many times they were, how frequently they were meeting. Less than one third wanted more. How do you feel before meeting with your supervisor? Well, this is, question is really measuring how much we trust and value one another. Two-thirds of the responders were willing and looking forward to meeting with their supervisor. And again, Lencioni, he says that lack of trust is one of the five dysfunctions in the team. So trust is crucial in the relationship between supervisors and team members. Do you think your supervisor knows you feel this way? Well, more than one-third say that their supervisor doesn't know how they're feeling. Well, there's all sorts of reasons for not looking forward to meeting with your supervisor, such as protecting yourself or feeling vulnerable due to past experiences. But the supervisor relationship is not the place for professional distancing. How do you feel after meeting with your supervisor is the next question. Well, a number of people were dissatisfied, but most were encouraged and affirmed, and that's really good. This brings out the importance of good meetings so that people can experience trust and partnership. Number 26, what are the main outcomes for you from meeting with your supervisor? 11% said they were frustrated. That was the bad side. But then the encouraging things were that a lot of people said, make me feel part of the team, clarifying my thinking and increasing mutual trust and increased sense of partnership. The next question was, what do you think the supervisor thinks you will gain from meeting together? Was fairly similar. The difference was that, of course, the supervisor wouldn't work out that you were being frustrated. And we want our supervisor to put themselves in our shoes. And so the question is, are you putting yourself in your supervisor's shoes? Think about their agenda before the meeting. Think about if we're coming with a different agenda, whether we're going to be frustrating our boss or ourselves. So things like the quarterly meetings, we do need to come to prepared to answer questions about the different responsibilities that we have.
Can I say a few things on that? One is there are differences between men and women and differences between supervisors and people being supervised because we have different things that are pressuring us. Mm. And I've mucked it up too many times to count. But, for example, I'm happy to wing things. I worked with a woman once who, because it's hard work to prepare stuff, she didn't like winging things, and so I changed what we were going to do on her without telling her, and she was quite rightly angry with me. So you've got to be really careful about those sorts of things. Supervisors, you need to work very hard and do a better job at preparing because it's a risky thing. When you're particularly the accountability, the quarterly one, your whole life is being exposed. If there is something you as the supervisor really want to raise, make sure you warn before you raise it. Mm-hmm. There's those sorts of things. They're just obvious. Mm-hmm.
Number 28, we asked, what is hard about meeting with your supervisor? And basically we've got a list there that there were quite a few people on each of them. My self-protectiveness, not wanting to be prodded, was one of them. But we need to actually name some of these problems, some of these things that are hard about meeting with our supervisor and actually deal with them. When they say that, when more than a quarter said that this, that their own personal self-protectiveness was one of the hindrances to them meeting with their supervisor, this indicates a problem with the team relationships or the process or their trust in their boss.
Thank you. And then we ask the question, do you think your supervisor knows that you feel this way? More than half the people said no. Mm-hmm. Now, that is very hard. It doesn't promote trust. And the problem is both ways. You as the one being supervised haven't been honest and the supervisor hasn't been keeping an eye out and asking. So we've got to try and do much, much better than that. We need to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And question 30 is, how do you and your supervisor assess the quality of your meetings? 60% of people said they never talk about the quality of the meetings. Mm-hmm. Again, that's not good enough.
Yeah, I've been actually asked that question, how can we make our meetings better? And I think it's a really good question for me and my boss to keep exploring. We don't have meetings just for the sake of it, and we want to assess them and work out how to do them better. And if our meetings aren't working for one of us, we need to work that out.
Now, you've been very good boys and girls and staying awake. We've only got 5 minutes left, so let's race through these last few. These last set of questions are about not just about you and your supervisor, but it's about you and the team. So if there's only two of you in the team, this is superfluous, but God willing, there'll be more than that in our team in due course. And so these questions are about the whole team functioning. So over to Juliet for question 31.
Okay, so this is now talking about staff team, how often we meet. Basically, the meeting was the same as the... it was more like a weekly, and they said that the frequency was fine with the team.
Okay, now I'm interested in question 33. How do you feel after meeting with the staff team? This is a similar sort of question to what we asked before about how do you feel about meeting with your supervisor. And Juliet, you've compared the two?
Yeah, I've compared the two because I'm a scientist. And it was interesting to note that you feel the people that responded felt less affirmed by other staff members than they felt by their supervisor. And we were wondering whether maybe that's because the supervisor sort of knows that that's his job and yet some of the other staff don't think that, they think that it's okay that, you know, the supervisor's doing the encouraging thing. And also the other thought was that was interesting, the difference was that in the case you can actually feel... disempowered after meeting with your staff team more so than you can with your supervisor.
That does mean then that you've got to pay very close attention to how the staff itself is functioning. Mm. So we've talked about you as the team leader, you as the team member, but then the whole staff has got to be taken into account because it does look like teams are more disempowering than they are just in having you and your supervisor. That's a scary thing. James got a question.
Maybe that's a reflection of the supervisor and the one being supervised having a greater clarity on the role that each of them is playing, and in particular that member is playing in the team. And so then when the team leader is with each of those people, they can express that, and there is that greater feeling of power, whereas when you're in the team setting, the team members amongst themselves don't understand that as much.
I think the questions that are coming up now, I think, show that, actually. But one of the things is that it seems from this, which is very scary, and it's not enough data yet, but what it seems is that our functioning is not particularly improved by meeting as a whole team. So most of the improvement comes from supervisor and supervised. The team, in some ways, actually takes us backwards, which is not the way it should be.
And it was interesting too, we asked some questions about meeting staff apart from the team meetings, and I thought they were quite helpful. The question number 35, what's the purpose of the separate meetings? It was rather things like sharpening one another, mutual support and getting to know each other were really quite low. That was in among the team members individually. And so this basically shows that there's not much mutual support or relationship building. And partly this actually reflects why maybe other team members don't understand your goals, and why over half indicated they received no assistance with each other's goals. And I'll skip the next one.
Yeah, 38, maybe just go to 38.
Okay. Do you assist them in the achievement of their goals? Well, that's... basically, it was interesting to note that the only ones who saw themselves as helping with their fellow team members' goals but not being helped themselves were actually some of the women. I wonder whether this actually reflects a male-female difference in that the women more easily see themselves as helpers. No team member is an island, and there's lots of overlaps in the ministries of the different members of a team, and I think that we could benefit by sharing information and communicating more about the areas of overlap. And I was wondering whether it's a little bit of a pride thing as well for men to want to be solo men. I hope I'm not being a bit unfair there. Or maybe they're a bit afraid of working too closely with a woman. But one of the joys of working together is that it makes ministry a joy, is actually the cooperation between and harmony between team members. So it's a really good thing to work towards. And I have to say also, it's when I'm here, that it can be another potential root of bitterness if one person perceives that they're always doing the helping of other people with their goals but not getting help themselves.
Our time will go. So can I just summarise a little bit of what we're going to do? I'm sorry, Juliet, to go off script now. And that is that there's this mix of how the team functions. People think we work cooperatively. About half thought that, and the other half thought we were a bunch of individuals that do a ministry.
Mm-hmm.
That some members think one and some think another makes it a very difficult sort of thing that you were just speaking about. But I'm wondering, Juliet, you're a single woman on a staff team. You've got any thoughts about the functioning of a single woman on a staff team? I know it's not what our topic is, but okay. We've discussed it.
Well, we've talked about the importance of meeting together and having different types of meetings and different the ideas of team building. And I think partly one of the ways that we and our team have done that is we've got the families together individually to have on weekends and to have breakfast and things like that. And so they've been whole families together with all the children all at once. And so as a single female on the team, it is very different for me. It's very, you have to be careful because I don't always feel like I'm part of things. But I also have to be checking myself in that. So I don't want to say more than that.
Thank you. And I want to summarise the last few questions. That's 48 to 51. About half of the respondents thought that the style of their team functioning wasn't working very well. Now, I think that's both good news and bad news. If half of the people don't think it's working very well, it's easy to start again. But if you don't do something about it, well, you must realise that we are at this time of transition of change, that teams are a fact of life now, an important fact of life in our churches. If we don't get it right now, what you are doing is consigning the next generation to follow our mistakes. That won't be good. And so let's try and get it right now. Even if we make mistakes, let's try and get it right now so that the next generation can find better ways of working in teams. I want to conclude. We'll just conclude now, and I don't think we've got time for questions, which is deliberate. I've got a couple of concluding comments, but then I wanted to ask Juliet at the end just to make a couple of comments on her journey over these last 6 months, because it has been a learning experience for both of us. But here's my my comments. The survey that you have in front of you was created to widen our thinking. That is, what are the sorts of issues that we need to think about in this area rather than just, do I have a job description? Do I have accountable things to be measured against? And I want to say it's a start. We're only starting on the journey, and we're on the journey too. In our discussions over the last 6 months, we've done a lot of diagnosing, and we've done this survey to try and gather information. And some of the answers that we have received have pushed us, and some of them have just challenged us. But here is some of the things that I want to say to us all. You do need to be held accountable in your ministry position. But accountability is essentially before the Lord. And so accountability is to help develop you to work out how we might grow better and how we might do the ministry better. We've discovered that aligning your job description and what you do to the church's vision helps the teams work better and helps the congregations work better. We've also discovered that the team leader, that is in our setting, our Anglican settings, the rector, needs to be the one that takes the responsibility for leading. But part of that responsibility for leading is not just sharing the vision of where we are going, but leading team members to be as good as they possibly can be. And I want to say that we all feel out of our depth here. And one of the things that we do is, because we feel out of our depth, is to say, I'm not going to touch that. I want to say, let's keep touching it. Let's keep working on it. Because, as I say, what we put in concrete today will affect the generations yet to come. Juliet?
So my closing remarks would be that I have come to appreciate the supervisor's role is very big. But it's a tricky role, but it's also a worthy task. The other thing is that I think that often the whole process doesn't take into account sufficiently the grace and the sovereignty of God, and the one that He's the one who gives the growth.
Another thought that I have was that I'm actually more than the particular responsibilities that I have been given. And as a woman, I'm more of a generalist, and I've basically I do have to have input in, for example, our youth ministry with the youth leaders, the women youth leaders, and it's really tricky when that's not understood. And sometimes people with more clearly defined roles don't see it as important. And the other thought was that I think we should be recognising that we are team leaders too. So every time we point the finger at the supervisor, look back and see how are our teams going below us. And I sort of challenge you to maybe take this little list that we've given you of questions and think through from the people that you're ministering to's perspective too.
Thank you. Pete wants to come up and close in prayer. I've got two final things to say, because I always finish off. First one is, we're just throwing ideas out here now. Those of you that know me, know that I have fairly settled views on a whole lot of stuff. And so if you'd like to talk with me about what my settled views are, feel free to email. And secondly, 28 respondents is a really good start. I'm going to get Juliet to put her email address up here. If you'd like to fill out the survey, email her and she'll give you the link to fill out the survey. Thank you very much.
Let's thank Archie and Juliet, everyone.